Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say your
name. Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, August 9th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. That's right, folks. It's Casual Friday. And as such, on the program today, the great Cliff Schechter will be joining us. And ostensibly to give us movie reviews, the wonderful Obama bot Andy Kindler. Also on the program today, no, you'll have to forgive me. It's my daughter's birthday today, folks. That's right. Myla Cedar is now, yeah, hold on to your seats. She is now 8 years old. You longtime listeners of the program will probably need to sit down for a while after that. On the program today, Mitch McConnell. Is he in trouble? And what does it mean for the country if he is? Yes, he actually is meaningful in some way, if you can believe it. Also, Cory Booker. We'll talk to Cliff about him. I'm not a big fan, ladies and gentlemen. And 2012, one of the hottest on record. Are you shocked? And we will get to that fracking ban story that I've been teasing forever. But first, we're going to take a quick break, ladies and gentlemen. And the music for our break today, as it is her birthday, will be provided to us by none other than the birthday girl herself. Of course, I'm talking about my daughter, Myla Cedar, a newly minted sister. And she will be joining us later in the better half of the program. But here she is singing Maroon 5's Move Like Jagger.
Oh, yeah. Oh! Do shoot for the stars if it feels like an aim from my heart. If it feels like it can take me away and make it okay, that's where I'll behave. You want the control, so we'll make it. You want to know, yeah, we'll take it. You say I'm okay, my ego is bad, I don't give a shit. And it goes like this. Drink me by the tongue and I know you. Kiss me till you're drunk and I'll show you. Want the moves like Jack, I got the moves like Jack, I got the moves like Jack. I don't need to try to control you. Look into my eyes and I'm on. You want the moves like Jack, I got the moves like Jack, I got the moves like Jack. You wanna know how to make me smile? Take control, oh me, just run now. If I share my secrets, you're gonna have to keep it. Nobody else can see this. Ay, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. It is the musical stylings of my 8-year-old daughter, Myla Cedar, singing Maroon 5's Move Like Jagger. Got to move like Jagger. It is her birthday, so we are featuring her music today on the program. And before we bring in Cliff Schechter, we're also, of course, going to feature Jimmy Reefer Cake's famous theme song. Here it is now.
They'll have seen new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
There it is, Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com. Hello, Cliff.
Hello there, Samuel. How are you?
I'm doing well. Were you able to hear my daughter's version of Move Like
Her
Jagger?
Lovely singing voice?
You did, didn't you?
She has got style and class. So how has she come from you?
I have no
idea.
I'm
just kidding, Sammy.
I have no idea.
She's kind of great. When does she sign the recording contract
and let you retire? Sooner rather than later. I definitely hope that will happen shortly, believe me.
Just remember, don't let her get all crazy Britney Spears, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, I know exactly what you're saying. And it depends on how much cash she brings in. And then
if it's enough money, then she's on her own, frankly.
Exactly. But how are you today, Cliff?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking, my friend. I'm back in this big apple of ours.
Yes, and sadly,
in New York.
I am remote today, so the irony is that you could actually be in studio, and I am not in studio.
That is rather ironic, isn't it? But that today you are the guy in the sticks. Normally it's me.
All right. Well, let's get right into this, Cliff, because when there's been a couple of stories about Mitch McConnell over the past couple of days, now if I am not mistaken, you actually met your wife working on a campaign against Mitch McConnell. Is that right?
You are a smart man, Sammy. I'm impressed by the memory. It may be that you remember we threw that little 40th birthday bash for me. God, I'm old. I think there were some trinkets up on the walls to remember how we'd actually met, because it was funny. Yeah, we met in 2002 working against him, and it was a candidate who didn't really run very hard and didn't really have much of a chance. But by working on that race, besides obviously meeting my wife, which made it worth it in and of itself, I learned a lot about the guy, and it's great to finally see this happening, because it's been driving me crazy for a decade. Because being on the ground there and seeing that, A, nobody liked him, even then, B, you know, that he was very thin-skinned and vulnerable if an early attack was run against him to sort of bring him out of his hole. There are ways to beat this guy. He reminded me, I always used to compare him to sort of Jesse Helms, who would never, not exactly in that way, but in the way that Helms would never have above of like around a 48% approval rating at best in North Carolina, but then he would find a way to tar and attack his opponent, and no one would ever start sort of an early campaign against him, and hold him down, you know, step on the guy's neck when you've got him down, don't let him back up. And I'm seeing it now. I mean, obviously a lot of this are self-inflicted wounds, but man, is this a glorious thing to watch. I mean, essentially,
okay,
the guy has spent the past
before,
2 years.
Before you get into that, tell us, I mean, just for people who are not following this, I mean, there's two things that I want to make. Well, one, I want you to set the sort of the scene that's happening in Kentucky. And two, I want to tell people that we're not just talking about a single race here. A particular Senate race, this is going to have implications over the next 15 months in terms of what things get cut, whether it's sequester, whether or not President Obama has to cave again. I mean, the implications of this race go far beyond Kentucky. Let's just put it that way. We will get to that in a second. But just set the table for us, because I don't think people know
sure
what McConnell's situation is, and then we will play the sound that is sort of capping off this week for him.
Sure. I mean, I'm G-chatting this over to you right now. I wrote two major pieces on him for the Washington Monthly back in 2004 that sort of predicted what a McConnell era would be like, because back then, you know, Bill Frist was the leader if he took over. That sort of, he'd kind of, you know, he's one of the guys who's responsible for bringing politics to where it is. You know what I mean? For taking traditions and trashing them and has a polarizing personality. Most of the people on his own side of the aisle can't stand him. But really viciously sort of attacking the other side and not working with them and on and on. And the reason why this has broader implications, in that piece I wrote in 2004, you know, he went to one of these trade groups, for example. These are just examples. One of these trade groups, business trade groups, that was supporting McCain-Feingold and threatened them that if they did, there would be retribution. There were a number of senators from, I think at the time, Susan Collins, even Sam Brownback, that were already assigned to McCain-Feingold, and he was at the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. He threatened them that if they did, they would get no money from him. He was the guy who sued in court to get McCain-Feingold overturned. This guy's whole career has been built on raising big gobs of corporate money, spreading it around to Senate races and House races, Republican races across the country, and just power for power's sake, basically extorting money from businesses. Obviously some of them happily give to him, but some of them don't even want to. But so he's created this huge power base that has benefited the entire party. That is his background. That is what he's done. That's what got him into leadership. It's not his good looks, believe it or not.
I'm shocked.
I'm sorry?
I'm shocked by that. It's not his good looks.
He is a handsome man. He is the best-looking turtle I've ever seen. You get to the race now, and the serious implications of this are, okay, so he supports the Secretary of State that was sort of his protege, a guy named Trey Grayson, more moderate Republican in 2010. Rand Paul runs as one of the early Tea Party nuts and beats the pants off of this guy in a primary. And Mitch, seeing the writing on the wall, immediately embraced Rand Paul, and supported him because he knew Rand Paul wanted to run for president, and so he supported him, and the sort of trade-off was, you support me for leader and support me in my race. Well, so part of that was he hired this guy, Jesse Benton, to be his campaign manager, who had managed, he's been part of the Paul family, he's married into it, in addition, but has been part of their dealings forever. The guy is Ron Paul's presidential campaign, he ran Rand's Senate campaign, he ran Ron Paul's PAC for a while. Who knows what else he's done for them. So that was supposed to head off a Tea Party challenge for McConnell, what's obviously happened what happened to Dick Lugar in Indiana and what's happened in these other places where these lunatics have gotten the nomination, Christine O'Donnell in Delaware and others. It didn't. What ended up happening was this Tea Party guy named Matt Bevin jumped in, and it's not just some, like, crazy guy yelling at him, although he is a crazy guy in his opinions, but he's a guy that is relatively telegenic and have a lot of money from business, and is going squarely at McConnell. So that whole plan to keep somebody keep a Tea Party opponent out of the race failed. And the Democrats got
now, hold on, now I want to stop us there, because not only did this plan fail, but now the fact that you've had this sort of shotgun wedding between Mitch McConnell and Jesse Benton, who is the former Rand Paul family guy, who's his campaign chief. There is a tape out there now, and I don't know if you've heard this. Have you heard this tape?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
It's awesome.
Well, I want to play this, because this is great. Now, this was recorded by a guy named Fusaro, Dennis Fusaro, who apparently was a stiffed campaign guy, a bitter campaign operative for the Pauls, right? And he was
nothing worse than a campaign operative spurned, my friend. Because, oh man!
And so Fusaro was calling Jesse Benton, who he must have known from the Paul days, and ostensibly to talk about some type of inappropriate campaign finance violation that took place with Ron Paul's campaign deputy national campaign manager. So he's talking about this, but he gets another tidbit at the end of this, and this tape has been released. And this just goes to show the problem that Mitch McConnell has. Here is the here is that tape right now.
Hey, Dennis, how are you?
Jesse, how you doing?
Pretty good. What's going on?
Hey, I'm just calling you because I wanted to ask you a question. Did you know that Dmitry Kosari gave Kent Sorensen a $30,000 check from a non-campaign account to induce him to support the Ron Paul presidential campaign? In other words, he made an expenditure that was coordinated and not reported to advance the election of Ron Paul for president, and he was a deputy campaign manager. Did you know that?
I'd like to see that. You got proof, man. I don't know anything about that.
Well, I got proof.
I'd like to see it.
Were you involved in that?
No, I have to share responsibility, so if you got proof of that, I'd like to take action.
If you're true about that, I'll show you the proof.
All right, I'd like to see it, man. I'll be honest.
I'll be getting it.
All right, man. You gotta get a hold of me. Well, you got my number.
Cell phone.
Okay, let me give you my address.
What, your email?
Yeah, or you want to mail it, or you want to email it? What's easier for you?
I'll mail it to you.
All right, you ready?
Yep. Okay, I got it.
All right, then.
I appreciate
it. How's everything going with you?
It's going well, keeping busy, raising the family, minding the store, so to speak, but,
Are you still with that seminary?
I am.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah, and I guess you're doing something else then.
I'm doing something else, man. I am, between you and me, I'm sort of holding my nose for 2 years because what we're doing here is going to be a big benefit to Rand in 16, so that's my long vision. So.
Okay. All right, very good. Thanks.
All right, man.
See
ya. Mail after me, and don't be a stranger. Call me anytime.
Okay, we'll do it. Bye-bye.
So much for that being between you and me.
Well, here's the thing. Oh, is that still the thing?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I was waiting because I was going to summarize all the trials and travails of McConnell in one big, it's good to tell at this point because the Tea Party marriage, I'm going
to
keep talking through that beep.
Yeah,
it's not going
to
stop me.
I don't know what that is.
You're hearing that too, right? It's not
yeah.
just me?
No, I wouldn't worry about it. We're okay.
Okay, I'll kick its ass. It doesn't scare me. So, in any case, this whole deal has blown up in so many ways. First of all, they lose... first of all, they got a Tea Party opponent anyhow, who most of the Tea Party factions are supporting. It looks like Freedom Works, Dick Armey's group is going to support it. Club for Growth might get in. I love these guys now. But then Jesse Benton, it's not even just that. It's the subject of that phone call was, people may remember a state senator in Iowa switched his support from Michelle Bachmann to Ron Paul right before the Iowa primary. And it turns out that there were negotiations with this guy, and their money may have changed hands, which is, by the way, illegal. It'd be vote buying. And Jesse Benton was the guy that negotiated this. So this guy at some point could be indicted, quite frankly. So they hire this guy just to kiss the Paul family's butts and the Tea Party's butts. He may be in trouble financially. Or with the law for what he did. And then, of course, he says, I'm just holding my nose working for McConnell, making obvious to everybody what we already know. And the Kentucky Democratic Party doesn't make videos of people holding their noses and just mocking McConnell forever about this. I don't know. They're not doing their job. So there's been a bad news cycle every little bit. They were just at this famous Kentucky picnic / political event known as Fancy Farm, which I went to back in 2002, and this church picnic that McConnell turned into this sort of battering session, another McConnell gift. And, he was being slammed from the right by this by Bevin, the Tea Party guy. Alison Lundgren Grimes, you may have seen her introductory ad, which is phenomenal.
And she is, we should say, she is the Democratic candidate.
I showed she's the Secretary of State. She won in 2010 with 60% of the vote. Won in a huge way. Her dad's a former chairman of the Kentucky Democratic Party and is very close with the Clintons, which is why you saw Bill Clinton also put out a video supporting her, and they're going to help raise a lot of money. So this is a serious, I mean, she's telegenic. Her ad is terrific. She's, you know, she ran a race in Kentucky where as a Democrat she won with over 60% of the vote. She's got the connections. I mean, so there's a lot of reasons for McConnell to be scared. This is all these things are happening the same week, and then polls come out for the first time in McConnell's career, and he ran for the Senate for the first time in 1984, mind you, where some people weren't alive yet who were listening to this program, I'm sure. And two polls showing that he's behind her. I mean, you know, it's margin of error stuff, but he's losing, which was unthinkable in showing people how vulnerable he is. And then she goes to she fancy farm the last thing, all of a sudden gets up and has the best line there that gets reported throughout the state, which is a double entendre, sort of mocking Mitch, not just for the fact that what an obstructionist he is, but in a way taking a poke at him for his age, where basically she's like, he's such an obstructionist, if he had a kidney stone, he'd refuse to pass it, which was just awesome. And so the news cycles for McConnell for 2 weeks now have been terrible.
Well, I want to talk about two things which could have national implications in this election. One is obviously that Mitch McConnell is the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, and he has, and like you said, he is a huge corporate shill, and so he is, at least I think dispositionally, not in terms of pragmatically, but dispositionally aligned with the corporate interests in the Republican Party. And so when it came time to sort of shut down the nut jobs and actually allow for some taxes to rise as opposed to all the taxes that could have risen at the beginning of this year, I guess it was, and instead of allowing the Senate to vote to go along with any notion of shutting down the government, he's been a guy who has cut deals. He no longer can afford to do that. I mean, isn't that the point here? Is that because he's flanked on the right, and he's desperately sending out emails about, you know, prayer and stuff like that. But at the end of the day,
the prayer thing's hysterical. He's just kissing the ass of the right. Yeah.
But isn't his dilemma going to be that he's going to actually have to be more obstructionist to get through his primary, and then he's going to have to tack back to the left? I mean, relative to Kentucky, but before he gets through that primary, he's got to be a lunatic, right, in the Senate. I mean, that's the implications for the rest of the country.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. The implications for the country are two very big things, and these are why I've always made the argument, even back then, about why you have to go out after McConnell. McConnell is this dorky loser. He's obsessed with power, all right? This is the guy that's staying up into all hours of the night looking at, you know, how three people voted in Paducah, Kentucky, or you know, what he can do to undermine a bill, who he can buy off. I mean, this is his life, is creating misery for people. And he's had this sort of, you know, this reputation of being unbeatable. He, in a lot of ways, you know, I've worked against the NRA, it reminds me of them, which is they create this sort of myth that they can't be beaten. But once you sort of take off the false cover, you see that they're very vulnerable if it's done right and people are willing to invest the resources in doing it. So, you know, you have a lot to gain here. If you knock this guy out of the Senate organizationally, the Republicans, you know, you've got a civil war brewing between, you know, the paleocon, you know, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul wing, and the neocon Lindsey Graham, John McCain wing. But that's only going to get worse if McConnell is gone. He's been weak lately, he's the closest thing they have to somebody who can organize people. Secondly, just during this election, if you keep him in Kentucky fighting for his life, he will not be in Washington, D.C. obstructing things. He can't be. He will have to actually spend time in a state that really isn't his home state, that he doesn't really spend any time in, and he will have to fight for his political life there, and that will weaken Republicans in Washington. Third, when you're talking about, you know, all the business interest stuff, he's been as responsible, if not more than for than anyone else, for turning the Republicans into this party of just slush fund corporate money. And what he does during these elections in the past is he sits on this big war chest of people who give him legalized bribes, and he just shares it with everybody else, all the other vulnerable Republicans. Well, you know, there are Republicans obviously who are challenging Democrats who can win in states like West Virginia and Montana, you know, where Democrats have stepped down, or in states, you know, like Kay Hagan in North Carolina. He can give a ton of money to these guys if he doesn't have to spend it defending himself. Also in Georgia, where there's an open house, you know, open seat with the Democrats, especially with some of the nutbags that the Republicans might put up, you know, with Michelle Nunn there, could pick up a seat. Or potentially in Maine, if the right person jumps in against Susan Collins. Potentially even in South Carolina, if the Republican Party there, they're doing the same thing to Lindsey Graham and they're doing to McConnell, will blow themselves up. People forget that South Carolina is also no longer the South Carolina of old. I think Obama only lost it by 10 points and didn't even contest it. So, you know, there are possibilities in these places. So I'm just saying, making McConnell spend his money on himself,
right,
hugely helps the Democratic Party, and hugely helps, more important than the Democratic Party, what we all care about, a progressive agenda.
Right. And you know, I keep thinking back about the difference here with Daschle. You know, Daschle obviously was dealing with an attack on his right, you know, as a Democrat Senate leader, and it was very problematic because it sort of like reined him in. In some ways, like, you know, now that McConnell is fearing an attack on his right, it is actually going to sort of make him go to crazy town, and it's going
right.
To,
well, he has to be more supportive of these nuts that want to shut down the government over Obamacare funding. And go to the crazy right. And this is where you had sent an article along about, and I think it was a very accurate article, and it doesn't just apply to Kentucky. It's one of the things you bang your head over all the time.
Yes.
You know, I don't remember what year it was. It was a bad Democratic year, maybe in 2004, where the minimum wage got put on the ballot. I believe it was in Florida, and won with 75% of the vote.
Yep.
It is a hugely populist issue that Democrats can win white, middle-class, and working-class voters on, just like the fact that Mitch McConnell has been at the forefront of cutting Social Security. And if Alison Lundgren and Grimes would stand up and defend, and she's already defending Medicare, she did in her first ad, defend the minimum wage, which she did, and raising it, which she did in her first ad, but would come out also, you know, I will increase Social Security, not cut it. You know, these are populist issues where she could grab a chunk of elderly rural white voters away from McConnell.
Well, now, I mean, this is the other aspect of it that has such national implications, because she is running on issues, the Medicare so far, in the raising of the minimum wage. And this is in a deeply red state, albeit Kentucky has more of a sort of a union friendly, worker friendly disposition and profile than a lot of other southern states.
And like a state, I'll add in, like a state like Montana or West Virginia, a very conservative state presidentially, and has become more so, I think, because of some of the racism factor with mm-hmm. Obama. But the state that has shown it, but the Kentucky, like those two other states I named, and there's others I'm probably not thinking of, has shown itself very willing to elect Democrats to statewide office. Right now, out of, I think, these six, or is it seven, statewide positions in there, including the governor, the attorney general, they're only one of them is held by a Republican.
And that is still,
they are willing to elect Democrats to statewide office.
And that is, and you know, these are not Democrats that you and I would necessarily appreciate in terms of most of their values. Short of, that is still a remnant of, you know, when Democrats were really about labor in many respects. And,
yes.
And so to watch Lundgren Grimes push the minimum wage, and you know, Atreos has been on this for years, just saying, like, even if you're a Democratic politician, and even if you don't want to see the minimum wage raised, and it's certainly not going to happen at a federal level at this juncture, Why would you not run on this? It is a great, great issue. It's a great issue.
It's an issue, and the truth is that
politics.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sam, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's it. I mean, it's a great issue in terms of policy and politics. So why wouldn't you run on it? And if she does this in Kentucky and can win or even come close, this is going to have, I think, really big implications in terms of what other Democrats do down the road. But I you're right. I would love to see her, expand Social Security to take him to
town. Right.
I
mean, look, Mark Begich is running on that right now in Alaska. Democrats can be reminded of things. Look, you know, at this point, we know the deal. There's a strong Wall Street base among Democrats. We know this. And as much as I want them to stand up to that base, and when it's right, but the minimum wage is an issue that has nothing to do with Wall Street.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's an issue that has to do with a lot of these types of companies that don't support Democrats anyhow. So as you said, politically, you don't lose anything. You gain the loyalty of all sorts of voters and all sorts of people. Again, 75%, I think it's pretty close to a majority of Republicans even support raising the minimum wage. Maybe it is a majority, because I know it's 90-whatever percent of Democrats, and it's probably 70-something, 80% of independents. You know, there's just, so politically, and then obviously economically and in terms of, morality of, not letting people die, because, of course, the Republicans are pro-life, it just makes sense on every level. And I've argued the same thing for Social Security. Obviously, then you are taking on Wall Street, but you know what? Too bad. Adding to Social Security, I mean, these are some issues that are populist issues that you can run on as a Democrat, and for the most part, you're not going to anger people that you would have with you.
They're freebies. They're total freebies.
And they all just make sense.
Yeah. Now, with that said, and maybe this is a good point to pivot to Cory Booker, now that we're talking about sort of, what flies with Wall Street when you're...
The opposite kind of Democrat?
Exactly. I mean, because I think,
we could have a Democrat more progressive from Kentucky than we do from New Jersey.
Well, I don't know if, that's an interesting thing to parse out, actually, in some respects. I mean, progressive in the sense, yes, I guess. I mean, when you're talking about economics in many respects, I think so. I mean, Cory Booker is one of those guys who is really managed his brand very, very well through the years. He is well known for literally running into burning buildings and saving people. Michael in The Office made a good point the other day, though, that his buddy said, Cory Booker wouldn't have to run into burning buildings to save people if he hadn't.
They can afford firefighters there?
If he hadn't been in favor of cutting first responders.
That's a great point by Michael.
Yes. Beyond that, there are other issues with Booker that we're well familiar with. People forget this, but
corporate ad reform—he's part of that whole gig.
Yep.
He is part of obviously everybody remembers when he talked about how great Bain Capital was.
Yeah. Let me just remind people, because I don't know if people remember this. I don't know if people remember that when President Obama, in his reelection campaign, started attacking Bain Capital, which was a no-brainer. We had already seen Newt Gingrich just tear Romney apart with Bain Capital. It would have been political malpractice not to continue on with that attack. Cory Booker, I think he was on Meet the Press or whatever it was, and this is what he had to say. I have to just say, from a very personal level, I'm not about to sit here and indict private equity, Booker said. To me, it's just we're getting to a ridiculous point in America, especially that I know I live in a state where pension funds, unions, and other people are investing in companies like Bain Capital. If you look at the totality of Bain Capital's record, they've done lots of support businesses to grow businesses. And to me, and I'm very uncomfortable with this, the last point I'll make is this kind of stuff is nauseating to me on both sides. It's nauseating to the American public. Enough is enough. Stop attacking private equity. Stop attacking Jeremiah Wright. Where is the equivalent?
Right, he was equating the two of them, with the right attacking Jeremiah Wright and the left attacking what Romney did. And there are so many things wrong with what he said there. First of all, whether you believe Obama should have been attacking private equity in totality, he wasn't. He was attacking what Mitt Romney did at Bain. It's a very specific thing. He didn't say, no private equity has ever created jobs. So this guy was literally what Cory Booker was doing was building up a straw man to defend his friend.
Yes.
Because very specifically what they were doing was saying, these are the choices Mitt Romney made at Bain Capital, which was to enrich himself by bankrupting people and throwing people out of their jobs. So that's the first thing that he completely got incorrect. The second thing is, really, you're going to compare that to Jeremiah Wright? You're going to compare people using racism and using a preacher who Obama used to go to, who eventually he disavowed for some of the things he said, whether he should have or not? There are a lot of people that say a lot worse. I know. I studied the National Rifle Association. I don't see people on the right disavowing. But you're going to equate that with somebody pointing out that this guy that went in and literally, like, destroyed people's livelihoods, destroyed whole towns. I mean, again, you know, I may live in a city that actually, in the end, because of a number of big corporations, you know, that have stayed, like Procter & Gamble and some other factors, Cincinnati has done pretty well. But, you know, you can take a drive throughout the Midwest, and you can see these towns, places like Youngstown and whatever, that used to be thriving cities that the Mitt Romneys of the world have freaking destroyed, like Detroit, for example. And that's not a legitimate, you know, talking about what our economics has been and what Mitt Romney chose to do, that's not legitimate.
No, of course not. I mean, of course he was being disingenuous. And the bottom line is that he is bathed in this type of stuff. There was a story out by the New York Times the other day on Cory Booker talking about, let me just quote from it. Mr. Booker, now it starts off with Cory Booker going out west and talking to the Silicon Valley types of people. And it goes on to say, Mr. Booker personally has obtained money for a startup called Waywire from influential investors, including Google's executive.
Not big people, you know, Eric Schmidt of Google, yep. and what were some of the other names? You know, nobody important.
Now, a year after its debut, Waywire has already endured a round of layoffs, had just 2,000 visitors in June, according to Compete, a web tracking service. The company still says
the Majority Report kicks their ass.
That is absolutely true. Yet, in financial disclosures filed
Eric
last
Schmidt,
month,
invest in the Majority Report if you want to actually.
Well, no,
make
wait
some
a second.
Back,
hold on,
pal.
Because we got to get to this because this is stunning.
Sorry,
Booker, in financial disclosure files revealed last month, revealed that his stake in the company was worth $1 to $5 million. Taken together,
right.
His other assets were worth no more than $730,000. The guy has been raising money for this company as mayor. Now, it's perfectly legal.
You know what else he did, which is important to state too, Sam, is he's made speeches since he's become mayor and started the Cory Booker show, first by getting a friend of his to do a documentary on his first run. People forget. That was his big PR entree.
Yes,
taking on
fight.
The system. He was a new populist young guy who chose to live in the projects in Newark and all that. I mean, you know, his career's been stage managed. This guy, when the rest of us were in college figuring out how many beers we're going to drink that night, this guy would be planning his route to the presidency.
Yeah, it is stunning.
And so he's made speeches worth he's gotten paid $1.3 million since he's been. Gave half of that to charity. You know what that means? He didn't give the other half to charity. So he's made paid corporate speeches while he's been in public office and kept $650,000 of that. In addition to what you're saying.
I'll tell you, the real problem with a story like this, and then, of course, he's also, Waywire has also provided jobs for associates of Mr. Booker, the son of a top campaign supporter, and his social media consultant, who is now on his Senate campaign staff. I mean, in other words, the story of Cory Booker is, and we should also say that on top of that, you know who else sat on that advisory board of Cory Booker's company? Jeff Zucker's 15-year-old son was on the advisory board because apparently, and he has now since resigned after this story came out, His son was an advisor, as a millennial advisor. Apparently, a YYR spokesman said that Andrew Zucker was hired in March after another member of the firm's advisory board told Kohl founder Sarah Ross that he had, quote, developed a reputation of being able to identify technologies that would be popular with teenagers and which ones wouldn't be. So, in other words,
most, you know, 15-year-olds all the time accomplish that kind of thing.
I mean, maybe, but the point is,
I mean, I'm not shocked there. Obviously, he hired this kid for his talent because they could see when he was 12. It was kind of like when James Carville started doing that sports radio show with Luke Russert. Right. It was Luke Russert's knowledge of sports that got it done.
Look, the bottom line is, you know, regardless of whether Cory Booker pocketed $600,000 or $1 million, I mean, it's quite evident that this guy's going to go on to make a lot of money at one point, different points in his career. The bottom line, though, is that this guy is more of that ilk than the ilk that he
projects. Right, but I don't even care
Twitter.
How much money he makes. He's more of that ilk, but the bigger problem is that there are going to be a lot of regulatory issues dealing with the growth of the Internet. There have been, there will be.
Oh, yeah. Of
right?
course. I mean, this guy's...
net
this
neutrality,
guy's
things like of this nature. So what's going to happen when Eric Schmidt, who's investing in Cory Booker's company, and Cory Booker needs him to stay invested in his company, what happens when he calls him and needs to talk about net neutrality or something else? What happens when some of these corporations where he's given speeches and has gotten 20 or 15 or, you know, whatever, 1,000 per speech, you know, say, hey, remember the money we gave you? We need to talk to you about something. What happens then?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I don't even think it's that. I don't even think it's a question of leverage, because I think this, you know, when you see Cory Booker's, you know, had Jeff Zucker, who runs CNN, we should say, his son on his advisory board, where he's taking money from Schmidt. It's not so much that Schmidt has leverage over him now. What it is that these guys are simpatico. There's no way that Cory Booker, it doesn't matter how much money is involved or not, that's, we don't even have to talk about that, because they are, we know who Cory Booker is going to listen to on these questions.
Right. They're his people is what you're saying. Yes, it doesn't really matter what the specifics are. They're just his people.
Right. You don't give money. You don't leverage money with this guy. You just give him money because he's one of you. And that's the bottom line. He's proven he's one of you. You don't have to leverage it, because that's why you give him money in the first place, is because he's not the type of guy you have to buy.
You're right. You support his career because you kind of know when he gets there.
Exactly.
That he's a Trojan horse, and you kind of know just what he's going to do.
Exactly.
And it's very smart, frankly, from their perspective.
Of course.
You know? You support a young and up-and-coming, charismatic African-American. And I mean, I'm sorry, but the racial part of it is important here, because you know he's going to have a lot of loyalty from African American voters. You can bring the money there, and you can, you know, help get him over the top and get him into these offices, and you know, it's a good sort of smokescreen for a lot of what he really stands for.
That's also why he brought up Jeremiah Wright. Right? I mean, that's why he raises Jeremiah Wright in an analogy that makes absolutely zero sense. But he brings up Jeremiah Wright because he wants to make it like, you know, attacking private equity is like being racist. I mean, that is the equation that he's trying to draw there. And so, you know, this is, and maybe in his mind it is, you know, because private equity are his peeps. And so, you know, it is a real shame this guy's going to win the primary. I think it's the special election is Tuesday. He's going to win. I would have loved to see
him.
He's
going to win the general election.
And he's
going to
win the general election.
A neoliberal representing New Jersey, which is a state where we could have, you know, I mean, the worst part about it is that he's up against Rush Holt, who's an actual rocket scientist.
Yep.
Like, really, from Princeton, and brilliant and, you know, progressive on everything.
Very good on wireless surveillance. I mean, good across the board. And this is the guy who should be who should be senator from that state.
Right. If Cory Booker is the best we could get, you know, I'd say, well, okay, better than you know, having a Republican there. But he's not the best we could get. We could do much better in New Jersey. You know, I mean, essentially, I don't know if he'll be this bad, but it's almost the equivalent of having Joe Lieberman represent Connecticut.
I
where you sit there and say, sure, he's great on gay rights.
He isn't a neocon.
You know, Joe Lieberman led the fight.
I think he actually, on foreign policy, may be close to neoconish as it is. This is a guy who was endorsed by Jack Kemp the first time he ran for mayor. I mean, this guy is a problem, and he's going to get up there. He's going to sing the praises of Christie. And so people should really be conscious of who Cory Booker is. It's a huge drop off from Frank Lautenberg, I can tell you that right now. And
I found in a lot of these races, you know, over the recent years, when it comes to sort of Democrats who've left and Democrats who've taken their place in some of these other states, we've stepped forward, right? Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Blumenthal, a huge step forward, right, from Lieberman.
Yep.
Or is it Murphy? Murphy, I'm sorry. Murphy, a huge step forward from Joe Lieberman, right? You know, in a lot of these places, you know, we've gotten somebody better than the Democrat who left. You know, I don't know why others. I thought about this the other day, and a lot of these examples were coming to me at that time. You know, I mean, I'm going further back now, but you know, when Jim Jeffords, who caucused with the Democrats, left, who was sort of a marginal Republican centrist Democrat when he became a Democrat, we got Bernie Sanders. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We moved in the right direction in a whole lot of these places. Exactly the opposite direction.
Elizabeth Warren from John Kerry. I mean, you know, Kerry's aspiration.
Yeah, there's another example. Elizabeth Warren, definitely an economic issue, so much more progressive than John Kerry, who was good in a lot of other stuff, but, you know, was sort of a free trader. He wasn't a complete neoliberal, but certainly wasn't what we would have wanted, you know. I mean, but we're not doing that in New Jersey. Now we're losing an old-style liberal lion in Lautenberg, and we're getting one of these newfangled neoliberals in Cory Booker. And again, I don't know if he's as bad as Joe Lieberman in foreign policy, but, social issues, he'll be great, just the way Joe Lieberman was. But I promise you, he'll be that guy like Lieberman was, who was holding up the public option or Medicare for 55 and above. That's the kind of role Cory Booker could be playing.
I think you're right about that. And, you know, all right, we just got a minute or two here, but I want you to weigh in on this because you grew up a New Yorker. The mayor's race is heating up. I'm going to try and have Bill de Blasio on the program sometime next week, is my hope. I was out the other day. I saw Sandra Fluck was literally walking around with Christine Quinn. Christine Quinn really and Cory Booker just seemed to me to be of the same ilk in some way. They're Bloombergian.
They are.
Give me your thoughts.
They are.
Just got a couple minutes. Give me your thoughts.
And this is very important to me. Let's just be clear, because in the past I've come out and disclosed I've worked for Mayor Bloomberg on Mayors Against Illegal Guns, but I'm also not shy about saying on the economic agenda I very much disagree with Mayor Bloomberg. And I just think at this point, you come back to New York, I can tell you this because I'm here now, having lived in a different place, grew up here, spent a lot of my life here, and you come back and you see it again and again. That while, yes, you know, the crime is down and some things may have improved, some of the quality of life, but this has become a city that is literally a tale of two cities with a small, wealthy elite. You got people from, you know, foreign countries or billionaires buying up apartments here, and people can't afford to stay in the city to the point where the upper middle class can't even afford to stay in the city. Do you want New York to keep going in that direction? And I just think, you know, we've had five terms now of either independent or Republican mayors in a very democratic city. De Blasio is the dream. He's what Los Angeles just got in Eric Garcetti. He's everything. I mean, I don't even need to go through individual issues because you can come up with any single issue you want. He's more progressive or as progressive as anybody else in the race.
Definitely.
You know, he's going to be the guy that's there for middle-class families in this city, for public educators, for the rest. You just, you know, this is easy for anybody listening if you're voting in that Democratic primary. We could only be so lucky. And right now, if he gets the runoff with Christine Quinn, all the polls show that he wins. It's him and Thompson splitting the vote since Wiener Man, fell down where you expected. So, I mean, de Blasio, I don't know. You say your piece on it, Sam, but I feel pretty strongly about
it. I agree with
you.
I mean, it's, you know, there was some issues like around transportation that he wasn't great on because he was sort of pushing the sort of outer borough. He has an outer borough mentality on some level. But he has since sort of tacked back to the left. You know, there's some issues with him with unions, but that's the case with all the candidates to a certain extent. By far, I think he is the most progressive out of the lot. And, you know, this we should have in New York City a really forward-leaning, progressive mayor. I mean, this is where the ideas are going to come from in the future, right? I mean, so hopefully we'll have him on next week. And
well, either that, and again, you're right. I mean, no one's perfect is what I would say. To comparing everyone, he seems by far to be the best. And again, yes, New York was the leader, is the leader sometimes. A lot of times, you know, that's become California in recent years because they've been willing to elect people sometimes who are even more progressive than we've been able to do. They've got a legislature. They don't have a Republican. They don't have a breakaway faction, you know, in their state Senate control who joined with Republicans. And you know, but here in the city, with them just electing Garcetti, I just think it would be so perfect if we could also match that, and then you could see sort of this, these cities leading the way. And I just think that's what we need.
Cliffy Schechter, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week, buddy.
Sammy, my pleasure. You going to still be up there picking strawberries next week, or are you back down in the city because I'm safely gone?
I'll return to the city as soon as you leave.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, and always a pleasure, my friend.
All right, I'll be in touch.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, Cliff. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be talking to Andy Kindler. He'll give me a movie suggestion, and again, it is my daughter Mila's birthday, so let's play. She will carry us through the break, singing Maroon 5's Move Like Jagger.
Oh! Do you shoot for the stars? If it feels like an aim from my heart, if it feels like it can take me away and make it okay, I swear I'll behave. You want the control, so we'll make it. You want her to know, yeah, we'll take it. You say I'm a kid, my ego is bad, I don't give a shit. And it goes like this. Take me by the tongue and I know you. Kiss me till you're drunk and I show you want the moves like that. I got the moves like that. I got the moves like that. I don't need to try to control you. Look into my eyes and I own you. Want the moves like that. I got the moves like that. I got the moves like that. You wanna know how to make me smile? Take control of me, just run now. If I share my secrets, you're gonna have to keep it. No one else can see this. Hey, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh. And it goes like this. Take me by the tongue and I know you. Look into my eyes and I own you. Want the moves like that? I got the moves like that. I got the moves like that.
All right, that's right.
I don't need to try to control you.
I don't need to try to control you. You got the moves like Jagger. Of course, I am talking about our next guest, the inimitable Andy Kindler. Andy, are you there?
Yes, I've got the moves like Henry Jaglum. Does that work?
pretty close, buddy. That it's my daughter's...
Nobody knows the
No, everybody
Nobody knows the references anymore?
Of course they do. They're laughing. They're laughing at that. They're not laughing at that. People are really enjoying that.
Turn up my monitor. Please turn up my monitor.
Andy, it is my daughter's 8th birthday, and so she...
Happy birthday! What's that your daughter's name?
I cannot remember. It starts with an M.
Oh.
The oldest joke in the world. And Mila.
Samet?
No, Mila. Her name is Mila.
M-I-L-A?
M-Y-L-A.
This is the greatest interview in history. Happy birthday, Mila.
She's
I'm Andy Kindler.
Yeah.
Your dad's friend who likes Obama. Hey, you know what? You're tearing me away from yelling at MSNBC now with Alex Wagner.
Oh, and what is it now? You have a habit of this. Like you, I've known you for, I guess, close to 20 years now, I guess. And
you can't figure me out, though. You can't figure me out, right, Sam?
No, you're an enigma. You're an enigma. I mean, I didn't really realize that you were particularly political until I saw your tweets out of how angry you were at Dylan Radigan all the time.
I'm doing a lot of consulting work on his potato farm.
Now, what are you mad about? What is bothering you on MSNBC? I mean, because you're also famous on this program. I should tell people who are listening for the first time as being quite the Obama bot. In fact, almost the quintessential Obama bot. And I find it hard to believe there's anything on MSNBC at this point that you would disagree with.
Did you watch me on Jay Leno? Wow. What a guy. He is so funny. Jay Leno? I love his joke and the rest of his monologue.
His joke and the rest
what
of
What a guy.
No.
Yeah, you heard it. No, well, Alex Wagner, the thing is that she's reading scathing editorials from The Guardian, which is a paper I'm not familiar with. And also, I wanted to, and she's saying things like, but my favorite thing she says is, let's unpack this. Let's sort of, what's the optics? What's the TikTok?
What? The what?
TikTok.
What is that?
That's what all the people on cable news say. Let's unpack. They say, they don't say, let's go deeper into this story. They always say, let's unpack this.
Yeah, no, I heard the unpack part, but what did you call the other part? The what?
The optics and the TikTok, like the clock.
Oh, the TikTok. Okay. I didn't know what you were saying there. I'm sorry. I could not follow what you were saying.
I returned my free Snowden coffee mug. Do you know why I returned it?
No. Why?
It's made in China and it leaks. Good night, everybody.
Oh, no. Oh, that's the first Edward Snowden joke I've ever heard. So now let me ask you, because I know you go at it with Glenn Greenwald, and you know, you and I probably have a differing perspective on Glenn's work on some level. But where are you on Edward Snowden? I mean, now that we've seen the implications of his leaks, where are you? I mean, you being, you know, Andy Kindler is like about as average a Joe as you could find in some very narrow sections of East Coast or West Coast cities where there's a lot of people like Andy Kindler.
Well, here's my take. I never liked that they called him a hero, and Chris Hayes called him a hero. Everyone called him a hero. The guy has hero syndrome. The guy. I don't care what Ellsberg said. Ellsberg was actually whistleblowing. The government said we were doing one thing. They lied about the Vietnam statistics. That doesn't mean everybody, even a guy who takes a job to leak is a hero. So regardless of what he leaked and how you feel about it, the embracing of him without anybody knowing him and Glenn Greenwald selling him as a hero, I found to be whatever a negative word would be, atrocious. Vile,
wait a second.
Contemptible.
Now, Andy.
Thank you.
Are you
Thank
not
you for
arguing
agreeing
that
with
Edward
me.
Snowden isn't a whistleblower? You're not arguing that he didn't show that our national security agency chiefs were literally lying to Congress and to the American people. But, I mean, you're not arguing that that's the case, because the papers have clearly shown that they were lying.
Okay. Why is he – so, in other words, whatever he – So that no matter what anybody, if they leak everything, if they say here's it all, then I'm just saying, why is he a hero? Why is he not someone? How do you know what his motivations are?
I don't know.
That's
I don't
all I'm
know.
Saying.
I mean, I tend to agree that that there was too much rush on both sides. Because, you know, frankly, just the other day, let me tell you what your buddy, Lester Holt, who I know you love, on NBC.
Hey, I play golf with him. Don't even start.
Listen, let me tell you what Lester Holt on NBC News said. He described Edward Snowden thusly: alleged American spy, Edward Snowden. Has anybody even alleged that this guy's a spy?
I think he meant spy-ish. He meant spy-ish.
Spy-ish?
Here's my problem, though, Sam.
Okay.
Yeah, here's my problem, Sam.
Now, why are you paying attention
like, for example,
to what Edward
did
Snowden
you like,
releasing? You're not paying attention to what Edward Snowden released. You immediately, when I asked you about Edward Snowden, you immediately go to a criticism of people calling him a hero as opposed to what he has released.
Okay, but let me say this. Let me just say my overall point. Do you remember the day that Obama gave the speech about Trayvon Martin?
I do.
Did you like the speech at all? Part of it?
No, of course. Yeah, I think he's a very eloquent speaker.
Okay, so I retweet Obama's speech, and some person says, oh, you'll like anything this guy does. Oh, you're in the tank for... It's like, why don't you wait till I retweet something that you disagree with before saying it? And I'm just saying, I don't know as much as you do, Sam. You're a much more intelligent man than me. You're a much more informed man than me. But all I hear from people is, you know, if they say, well, if you like Obama, I guess you like 14-year-old kids getting drone attacked. And it's like, I don't know the answers to everything. All I know is that people want to hear the results of stuff. They want to know that it's true. I don't know all this stuff about the NSA. All I know is that Obama took over from George W. Bush, and I don't know what people wanted him to do. Do they want him to just disconnect all the nuclear silos and just... I don't understand what they expect from him. He's not... why so much of the animus... And that's why I say animus from the left about Obama. I just don't get it. It just
really?
It concerns me.
Wow, you know, it's such an earnest appeal on your part. But I mean, I can go through a list. I mean, I'll tell you something. This look, in 2009, I don't know on what occasion I was going back and reading about this stuff. I think, but in 2009. One of the big issues, I mean, there were multiple issues and multiple things that the Obama administration could have done, even before it was in office, apparently, according to even Barney Frank, to mitigate the housing crisis for home borrowers, okay? But one of the big ones was, and President Obama had campaigned on this, was something called cram down in bankruptcies, which basically says right now, if you go into bankruptcy, you can actually get the principal written off on your second home, okay? But you cannot do this on your first home. And had the Obama administration carried through with its promise to promote this concept of cram down in bankruptcies, you would have seen so much less suffering on the part of homeowners, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people around the country. But they didn't want to do this because of the banks. That is where the first inkling that this guy is not the guy that he said he was. And you go consistently, there was programs that were promoted, HAMP, to help homeowners. And it really was just a way of saving the banks. And not just saving the banks, but basically... making sure that the banks lost no money, in fact, made a lot of money. That is the first part. And then on civil liberties, there's a lot of problem because a lot of people expected more from him because he's a civil, because he was a constitutional lawyer. And what the NSA is doing right now, I don't know if you've seen it, but in both the House and the Senate, both on the left and the right, people are saying this is a real, real problem. The NSA...
Yeah, but Sam, I don't think we should be talking about this on the phone because the man is listening. You know what I'm saying?
We're not talking on the phone. We're actually broadcasting it.
You're broadcasting it? What's the matter with you? Didn't you come up in my generation when we wanted to buy weed? We didn't get on the phone and say, we said, the eagle has landed, the Cheech has hit the Chong. That's what we said.
Well,
talking code, Sam. I can't be... I just want whoever's listening to this call to know that I'm a good American. That's all I care about.
Listen.
I just made myself sick a little bit there. I made myself very sick.
No, but I mean, I think, you know, it's this is the voice from Hollywood, because you basically own that place. And... I think everybody in the country knows that when Andy Kindler gets the sniffles, Hollywood gets a cold. And so...
I can't stop laughing. I can't stop laughing, but I choose not to. Look, all I'm saying is let's all agree that I'm right. I don't have information. I'm not someone who has access
and,
to
let
facts,
me just say one more thing, too.
Andy, I'm not someone who
Andy,
uses
let me
my
say one more thing.
Rational mind.
Obama... Also bad on weed. Also bad on weed.
He smoked weed.
Yeah. And he's also...
No, here's the thing.
He's still sending his Fed goons to shut down medical marijuana dispensaries.
Well, I'm going to tell him not to, because okay. I need weed. I need access to it. No, I agree with... I have no problem with people. But, for example, I mean, my big argument... which I told you many times before, was when they said that he gave in to the Republicans that time. When he said to the Republicans, okay, you want to raise everyone's, you don't want to raise everyone's taxes? Fine. That was a move, some moves he made were tactically exactly right, because that's the same year they passed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They repealed that, and that would never have gotten repealed. I think he's a sincere person who has his eye on the ball, but I don't think he's perfect. But I'm just saying, the hate that comes my way from everybody.
But people who aren't even talking about politics, right? I mean, you're just conflating.
They just hate me, Sam. They're Adam Carolla fans.
Right.
They hate me.
That's a
they call me
segue.
F-F-A blank blank O-T, for example.
Fout? They call you Fout?
They call me Faust.
What does
they
that mean?
Call me Faustian.
Now, wait a second. I want to talk about Carolla, but what do Adam Carolla fans call you? Fout? I don't understand.
No, F.
Yeah.
A.
Yeah.
Blank, blank, O T.
You can't say the word faggot? They call you a faggot.
People who are gay don't like that. I don't use these words like you do in your stand-up act, in your face stand-up act. I don't like that. I don't like any of those words. That's what they call me, or they call me a
You're not calling somebody a faggot. You're saying that that's what they respond, and that is, that is, when I used to do stand-up in Boston, that's what I would get all the time, just because I would talk about books.
That's where his base is.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now,
and they call me, I've never used the word, I'm not from the generation that uses the word retarded. I don't get it, really. So it doesn't occur to me.
Where did
but they
you
call
up?
Me retarded. They call me P-U-S-S-Y. Can I spell out? Can I say it?
Pussy.
Did they call me a pussy?
Yeah. Now, wait a second. Where did you grow up?
Are we on the air?
Yeah. Where did you grow up?
No. I know. I grew up in Queens. That's what I hate about it. I grew up with the... Like, for example, I separate Howard Stern from Adam Carolla. And this is my big argument. Why? Because Howard Stern is funny. He has prejudices. He has trouble. You know, he's got all the, I couldn't listen to him after 9/11. I couldn't listen to him in the Rodney King. I don't even listen to him now because I don't have Sirius XM. But he at least is funny. But his fans are everybody who would beat me up when I grew up. And that's who Adam Carolla's fans are. They're just bullies.
All right. Let me say two things here. One, you should know that Matt, who is one of my producers, grew up in Queens, and he is now he's having like a heart attack. And he's saying it all
Why?
Makes sense now. It's just because I think he's excited. Two.
Oh. Whitestone. I grew up in Whitestone.
Two, I agree with you totally. I actually think that Howard Stern is, first of all, I think he's much smarter than Adam Carolla.
Yes.
Whenever he's engaged in politics in some respects, generally they have been much better, particularly as of as of late. But I also think that what Howard Stern did was sort of put a mirror up to society. What Adam Carolla is just the ugly part we don't want to see when we put that mirror up to society. He is that. And I think Adam Carolla is a moron. I think he's a coward. And what shocks me, okay, and yes, his fans, of course, are morons. And some of Howard's fans are morons, too, but Howard also had smart fans. But Adam Carolla,
he does.
Because what he's doing works on multiple levels. Now, I haven't listened to Howard in ages, but, Howard Stern is the type of, he attacked Romney on Bain and this and that. I mean, he's a smart guy. The reason why we're talking about Carolla is because I think you tweeted something that I just found so disturbing when I chased it down. And that is Adam Carolla is soliciting and has solicited $1 million on the Fund Anything, which I guess is Donald Trump's version of Kickstarter. And he's gotten $1.1 million in the course of like a month to do a movie called Road Hard. And let me just... Let me just read one of his blog posts on this thing, just because it's so disturbing. Hey, party people! Just wrapped up a hell of a podcast with Jay Moore and Dennis Miller, two great guys and great comedians, both of whom know a lot of traveling stand-up, which reminds me, Road Hard! Just because we crossed the $1 million mark doesn't mean the fundraising party train needs to stop rolling. There are people starving somewhere, right? I'm going to keep raising cash to make this the best movie possible. You want to know how serious I am? I'm putting up one of my kids as a reward. And by kids, I mean cars. The guy is like, what, like 40 cars? This is just absurd.
Yeah, they're all like $3 million cars. The guy is rich. His net worth is $13 million, if you believe the places that tell you what his net worth is. $13 million.
I would think at least. And I would imagine that's...
It's a non-union movie. He's making a non-union... You can't be in SAG or actor to be in this movie. It's a non-union movie, which I don't even know if it's possible to make a non-union movie. But you would know more about that than me.
Well, somebody should go after him for that. And I want everybody who's going to be in that movie, they should have their after card revoked, if that's the case. Give me a break. My million-dollar babies, last week was a great week. That doesn't necessarily mean we're done. Just because we have enough scratch to make the movie doesn't necessarily mean we have enough to make it as great as it could be. What a scumbag. What a scumbag. You know.
Well, how about he says, in other words, the joke part is, I'm raffling off one of my kicks. That's his idea of a joke. So he always throws it. Sometimes he doesn't even throw in a joke. It's just the straight anti-Mexican propaganda. And who is liking this? And I feel like he's fleecing people, but at least he's fleecing his own people.
Right. At least they're morons. I mean, if they deserve to be fleeced.
Yeah.
It is a little bit disturbing to see this guy go on and raise $1.1 million where it's annoying. I have to say it's annoying.
And you know what? He doesn't even have to raise on that Donald Fund, the Trump thing. You don't have to even raise the amount of money, I don't think. Whatever you raise, I guess he went over it, but you get to keep anything, whatever you make.
Oh, yeah. It's not one of those things like Kickstarter where it's if you don't actually reach the goal. So what do you think this movie's going to be? Do you think it's going to be really funny or what?
It's going to be the worst thing. First of all, I read the actual breakdown, the thing that he pitched as like the guy who's the lead is Brett Madsen. He used to be a big star, but now he's down on his luck. And this is part of the pitch. He has to deal with retarded TSA agents. And by the way, comics who go after the TSA agents, that is, you should really be proud of yourself. Those are the people. Let's go after the people who are just, what are they doing so wrong that you have to call them retarded? Well, I don't know. Let's not get into the head of that. But it's like the movie sounds terrible. The other thing is, he's one of those people, Ricky Gervais is another one of these people, who they've done stand-up 3 or 4 times, so they think they're master expert stand-up.
What does
Adam Carolla know about going on the road?
What does he know about going on the road? That's ridiculous. He's the last person in the world, I would imagine, who knows anything about being a road comic. I mean, I think the ideas of road comics, I mean, if you got the genuine story of guys who are like, you know, who have been doing road comedy for years, it would be fascinating and stunningly depressing. But
they would know what they were talking about. They would have something to draw on, you know.
It's just why isn't Andy Kindler doing this?
You mean Road Hard? My idea was Road Kill. This should be his movie.
But why aren't you going on there and raising money to do a movie?
Well, here's the thing. I'm raising money right now for FU. I'm raising cash for FU money for me, if anybody wants to give to that. Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing, is that I gave this speech, I don't know if you know, I gave a speech in Montreal.
Yes, I wanted to ask
about
the state
of the industry.
Well, not a speech. You have, as far as I know, and I never, that my one big lament in my comedy career is that I never went to... I never went to that festival for whatever,
Montreal.
To Montreal.
Right.
And but for, what is it, 15 years, you've been giving the state of the industry speech. Is that right?
Yes, 17 years. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that's amazing was, like, you know, there was so much misreporting of, at a certain level I don't care, but another level it bothers me. It's like, I said that Corolla was like Hitler, if Hitler wasn't funny, right? And I said that he's a bigot with a capital Nazi. So all of a sudden these online things like, Kindler calls Corolla not Hitler. Doesn't seem to be kidding. No, because I was serious that the guy's a racist, but I was making an absurd comparison. And so, you know, people, you know, just wanted to focus on that. But, you know, the point was, is like, to me, he's using hate, he's hiding behind, you know, my argument was, you know, the neo-Nazis should have thought about this years ago, you know, beat up people in comedy clubs, and then you could say, it's comedy, what do you, you know, you don't like comedy?
Right.
So he's hiding behind the fact that he's saying he's a comedian when he's clearly not. I mean, I never listened to him on Loveline, I never found him funny, I never liked The Man Show, I never liked Crank Yankers, but I thought he was kind of like just a guy who was annoying, but he is basically goes on the Bill O'Reilly. He does Rolling with Corolla on the O'Reilly Factor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he hates, he's talked about how much he can't stand his mother because she was on food stamps, and so she's always, any chance he gets, he trashes his mother. He's got obviously got some issues, but.
Yeah, he's got some mom issues.
I don't know what happened
right?
to him.
I mean, that's it, right? He's got some mom issues, and he plays it out. And he carries it out in public. And, you know, the thing is, like, he says stuff I would love. I would, in any venue at any time ever, I would love to debate him on his stupid politics. And I would also allow the debate score to include laughs, too. Because the guy's not funny. He's a moron. He's stupid. And the winner could get, could have his own, pub style tap in his house installed. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. He's got one. Moron.
Yeah. But you know what the thing I love too? Is he, like, after he's quote taking the high road, like he won't, you know, he came back and goes, that's fine, you know, we're doing our thing. He calls his thing the pirate ship. That's what their nickname is. But I guess he doesn't realize that podcasts aren't illegal. He's not on a pirate ship. No one's stopping him. Because that's his big thing. He thinks, I hope they do blackball me. No one's blackballing you, Adam. You continue. You can do your podcast. Because when he used to be on the radio, there was somebody restraining him, like a producer or so. Hey, maybe, Adam, you shouldn't say that Mexicans are swarming over the border because they don't have our values. Maybe save that for another time. But on a podcast, he can say anything. Who's going to stop? I don't want him to stop. Let him do whatever he wants. I don't care.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, what are you going to expect? The guy refers to himself as Ace. I'm sorry.
The Ace Man.
All right, now let's shit on Marin.
No! You can't go after Marin.
His show got picked
terrible.
Up.
Terrible. Why would you do that?
Just to mix
Why
it up.
Why would you
no,
do that?
Of course not. Are you kidding?
To ruin my... I'm hanging by a thread here, Sam. I'm hanging by a thread. Do you want to cut off all of the threads and have me fall into the career?
One of the things I want to talk to you about that speech is that you give is what's amazing to me is that when you were doing that 17 years ago, there was a real sense like, wow, Andy is really pissing off a lot of people. And there was a real sense that maybe like this could actually hurt your career because you would get up there and shit on everybody in a way that was not, you know, sort of ingratiating necessarily. I mean, that was very frank. No, I mean, I'm saying this to your credit. There's a lot of people who...
I'm agreeing with you.
Who will criticize, but will do it in such a loving way that it really is more ingratiating than anything else. But you would actually satirize and critique. Like, it was biting. And there was a real sense that, like, man, this is really going to hurt Andy's career. And it seems to have, like, circled back now, where there's a greater appreciation for that, and it obviously hasn't hurt your career. I mean, it obviously has, but, I mean, now it's not actively hurting your career.
Right. Like, I make the argument that people, like, you know, has it hurt my career? Yes, but what's going to happen? Are the people who aren't calling me not going to call me more? I mean, I think I've burned whatever bridges. And it's interesting because, like, a lot of times I'll make fun of, like, I made fun of Michael Ovitz, and I actually heard that he joked about it with somebody. Because people have a big enough ego where they can take it, but then some people just can't. Like you know how Jay Leno is. He calls people up at home. Why are you making fun of me for that? What do I say? I'm just doing my thing. So but you're right though. And I feel more comfortable with it all the time that I have this role. I mean, first of all, I'm compelled to do it, so I couldn't not do it. And you can't really do it halfway. I mean, last year was tough because I kind of went after Louis C.K., and I know Louis C.K. is hugely talented, so it was a more of a nuanced slam that included my own insecurities. But so I've tried to expand the targets and refine the speech, and I've tried in some ways make it more roast-like and not so, because some years I just yelled and screamed. Right.
Now, what did you say about Louis? Louis's somebody who would definitely take it, I think, well.
What I basically said was, some of the things were just light slams. Like, you know, he says he changes his material every year. He doesn't do the same. So I said, yeah, he was 2 days away from coming up with the unified field theory. But because of his strict work policies,
dropped it. That's not a mean thing.
But that was light. But then I went a little bit heavier on, because I think my argument was that the media has celebrated him as the world's greatest comedian, which is not his fault. But in another way, he has kind of cultivated a media image. And so it was very convoluted, but it also has to do with the fact that I was friends with him, and then I had a kind of a falling out.
You did.
So I kind of brought myself into the whole thing. Yeah.
What was the falling out?
I don't think he knew it was a falling out, but...
What was the falling out?
Well, I can't really say... I don't want to go into the details, but it was one of these things where I felt very close to him, and then I kind of went to him with a problem, and I felt like that he was kind of a guy who was consumed by ambition in a way. So I felt like he didn't really want to hear what my problem was. I think it's unfair. I'm a hypersensitive guy, so a lot of it has to do with me, but it all mixed in together.
There's a decent amount of, I think, narcissism involved in people who are in the comedy business. I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
I mean...
Yeah, but...
There's also the concept of acquired narcissism, where you get to a certain point in your career where you are, the idea that the world that revolves around you in some respects is actually true. You know, like, you know,
yeah.
We both have friends who have gotten really famous, and you go into a restaurant with them and it changes literally the physics in the room, right? I mean, all of a sudden, you are aware that everyone in that restaurant is looking. And, you know, L.A. is a weird place, so that's hard to sort of gauge that. But, you know, you are aware that everyone in the restaurant, not everyone, but let's say 50% of the people are literally looking over there and either saying to their partner, you know, the person they're eating with, or saying to themselves, oh, my God, that's blankety blank. They literally change the center of gravity in a room. And there is this concept of acquired narcissism, which is, in some respects, perfectly legitimate. I mean, how could you not feel the world doesn't revolve around you when you go into a restaurant and everybody stops what they're doing on some level and takes notice of you? It's a strange thing, I think.
Well, yeah, and part of my thing was also about how the... Well, there was a couple things. Like, you know, for example, I love the show Portlandia, and I think the show Portlandia is hilarious. And I said there's more laughs in 5 minutes of Portlandia than in the whole episode of Louis, and especially the second season of Louis. But there gets to be this hero worship amongst comedians or whatever where they're like, oh, everything he does is the greatest. And so there's a certain petty aspect to what I'm saying. You know, it's like there is envy involved with it. But the media, some of it has nothing to do with Louis. The media, there was 4 or 5 publications that had said, he is the greatest comedian in the world of our generation. And I just think...
Wait, who is...
First of all, I am. Who? I am, Sam. That's not arguable. I am the greatest comedian.
Who is, though? I mean, I happen to think that Louis' show... I enjoy Louis' show much more than I enjoy Portlandia, but I think that, like... My taste in comedy is, I have a very loose definition of what is comedy in some respects. In other words, like I have more and more problems with straight on comedy as I, and probably that's part of the reason why I think I don't do comedy, really anymore is because I just didn't find it funny anymore. But who is the greatest comedian of our generation?
Well, I mean, there's so many different great. I mean, I love, for example, I love John Mulaney. I think he's like a genius, you know. And so I could name about 4 or 5 people who would go into that category.
Who else?
Of people Mulaney? I think who are else? The best.
Who else?
My mind always goes blank when people ask.
Well, I mean, what do you get a problem with him being?
Well, I had some people.
Who?
What's that?
Who? Don't say
mine like?
So that you get on I the second people. Season. Who is it? You have a list?
I'm
Are you looking it up on a notebook?
Well, no, I just booked these people on the... I booked these people on the show. My mind always goes... Okay, here's some people that I booked on the alternative show who I think are great comics. Okay, so Jig Notaro, brilliant comic.
Wait,
Todd
do you think...
Barry,
hold on for a second.
Annabelle Burris.
Hold on. Do you think these people are the greatest comedian of our generation?
No, nobody can be called that. Nobody can be called
that. Oh, okay.
It's a
right.
false
So you just have a problem
premise.
With anybody saying that. Okay, all right. What about Chappelle?
I love Chappelle. I haven't seen him recently, but I mean, he's a guy who was, you know how most comedians, when they're young, you could be funny, but he's a guy who I thought was hilarious the first time when he was 18. So, but I mean, I'm just saying, you know, Nick Kroll, there's sort of Deanne Smith, Colin Quinn, there's so many people. I'm just saying the idea that the media says we need the chance, they want to make a phenomenon. And also the media loves money. If someone makes money, they love it.
Well,
that's
yes.
their thing. This is how successful he is. This is how much money he makes. I'm just saying the media is not as great as you say it is, Sam. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Andy, on that,
I know you love Entertainment Weekly. You love the Entertainment, but
something.
It's not. You know, think differently.
Next time we're on, I want to talk about that last point. I mean, we're out of time. I got to go, but I want to talk about that. I want to talk about that that last point about money being an arbiter. So in this here, I'm going to give you a homework assignment. Not that you're not thinking about this already, but money as an arbiter of good art. Because I don't know if that was something that existed in the same way 30 years ago.
Exactly.
In fact, I would argue it didn't.
And one more thing.
Yeah.
One more thing. Eddie and the Cruisers too.
I don't know what that means.
That's my movie recommendation. Eddie and the Cruisers too.
All right, great. Andy Kindler, everybody. Andy Kindler.
I love you, Sam.
I love you too,
Andy.
Thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it, buddy.
You're the greatest.
All right. No, you're the greatest.
Thanks, my man.
All right. I am the greatest, according to Andy.
No.
I am the greatest.
The charity work that you do, the children's hospitals.
Nothing. I appreciate the call.
Then you're not the greatest.
All right. Bye, Andy. All right, folks. I guess it's going to be a freebie Friday. Holy cow. We're running late. We got no Jimmy Reefer Cake song this week. But if you want to give me a call at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 is the number. I will, let's see. Gosh, what am I doing? Let me call into that. I'll take your phone call, 646-257-3920. We'll take your IMs, and maybe I may get my daughter up here for an interview because it is her birthday, and instead of actually paying for a present, this is what I will give her. Hold on. Let me see if I can get Myla up here. Let's go to the IMs.
You are currently caller number 2, waiting to speak with a representative. Thank you for your patience.
Caller number 2 on the phone lines. Actually, we've got a caller on now. Hold on, bear with me. Hey, we're going a little slow here today, folks. I'm not sure why. Hold on. All right, you're calling from Skype. Who's this? You're on Skype. Who's this? Hello? I don't know if the sound is going to work today, folks. Seem to have a problem with the sound on the phone, so we're just going to go right into it. Let me see if I can just get Myla up here. In the meantime, on the IM. Did you guys know that you and the Daily Kos Morning Show host made the same terrorist conference call snooping joke with the same Arabic-esque joke voice on the same day even? Hilarious. Well, they probably do it earlier in the morning, so maybe we're the ones who stole it from them. Let's see if I can get this going. Gosh. Bear with me, folks. A little bit of technical problems. It's also incredibly hot here. All right, you seem to be calling from Skype. Who's this? Are you there?
Hey.
Hey, who's this?
Hi. Dan.
Dan?
Yes.
All right, welcome to the program, Dan. What's going on?
Murdering scum!
What's that?
The government's going to take our organs forcibly.
What?
Charter New World Order run, a facade of liberty and freedom, but serious attacks on free speech. Yes.
What?
We are ruled by scum!
We're ruled by scum.
Do you understand me?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Yes. This is awesome. Folks, we're on the receiving end.
Now they're feeding them on your thermostat by remote control, that the government's spying on all your emails and phone calls and tracking everywhere you're at through your cell phone is good, and that the face scanning cameras are good, and license plate reading cameras everywhere you go recorded, and the total surveillance, total anti-Americanism is good to fight the imaginary Al-Qaeda. And by the way, Al-Qaeda is just exploded.
All right.
Ooh, that makes me sick.
I know it does. All right. Well, thank you. That's awesome, folks.
Yes.
We just got that was like one of those like old Howard Stern calls where somebody has the sound machine. All right. Let's try this one more time. We'll see if Michelle from the Bronx is if we're talking to Michelle from the Bronx or if this is a sound machine. Michelle, are you there?
Hello, Sam. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good, thank thank you. Happy birthday to Milo.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very sweet of you.
I remember her in the womb. She's like a goddaughter to me.
She'll be happy to hear that. Yes, I mentioned to her today that, she went online and found out, I guess on Wikipedia, somebody said that her birth was announced on air by Janine back in the day, and she was very excited about that.
And it's star quality, Sam.
Yeah, I know. We got bad quality today. I'm going to have to say goodbye, Michelle, because our sound isn't doing so good today on the phones, but I appreciate your trying anyways. I'm going to jump to the IMs. Sorry about that, folks. I got to get a little better connection in this setup here. But Ahmad Tatum, I'm a new member to the community, been listening for a few weeks now. After poring over the Excel sheets, I decided that it is, in fact, worth the 30 cents per day, regardless of whether or not a spouse subsidizes half the cost. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much. You'll get one of these. Let's go to Phil Perspective. Can we please start referring to Mitch as Yertle the Turtle? Also, Booker is a neocon. People like Rabbi Shmuley Botek are his BFFs. And as you know, Botek makes Chuck Schumer look like Arafat. Yes, I've had conversations with Shmuley Botek. It's, maybe that's what we need. Shmuley squared. Shmuley on Shmuley. Bush and Chains. L.A. idiots are issuing to the peon brain term bonds, toxic debt to provide iPads to iCult addicted K-12 students. Serial killer, mass murderer, Obama wants to take his terrorist drones private. What could possibly go wrong? More good news for Mark Maron. Unpaid interns aren't protected by sexual harassment laws. As his radio show crashes and burns, Rush Limbaugh takes credit for The Daily Show. Wow. That's strange. Elliptic Monkey. Hi, Sam. What are your thoughts on Janet Napolitano becoming the head of UC Regents? And also, what are your thoughts on Amazon having a $600 million contract with data center for the CIA? And finally, have you heard of Five Eyes? I personally look at this as the beginning of public disinterest in corporate news and the new interest in grassroots news. Am I being optimistic or just paranoid? I haven't heard of the Five Eyes. I don't know what that is. I don't have any strong feelings on her becoming the head of the UC Regents, to be honest. I mean, I guess she has administrative experience. I don't know if she has academic experience. I don't know. I hadn't heard about the Amazon having a $600 million contract with a data center for the CIA. I'm not terribly surprised. They're in the server business. But I don't know if that's renting out servers or what. I mean, this story is a fascinating story. Apparently, LavaBit, which was an email service, and I say which was an email service, that Edward Snowden used and about maybe 300,000 or 400,000 other people used, which had serious security features and was used by people who did not want the government snooping through their emails, is no longer in business. Because it appears that Ladar Levinson, the founder of LavaBit, as he wrote on his company's website, "I have been forced to make a difficult decision, to become complicit in crimes against the American people or walk away from nearly 10 years of hard work by shutting down LavaBit." Obviously, he's constrained because if you are approached by the government, you're not allowed to say that you've had a request for data. In fact, he said that government-imposed restrictions prevented him from explaining what exactly led to his company's crisis point,
but he obviously got a request to have access to something. And he said, instead of that, I'm going to shut down the company. He apparently is going to file in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. And mount a legal challenge to the request that the U.S. government has given him. And if in the event that he wins, he believes that he would be able to resurrect Lavabit as an American company, which also implies that maybe in some respects he's thinking about taking this to a different country. He wrote, "This experience has taught me one very important lesson. Without congressional action or strong judicial precedent, I would strongly recommend against anyone trusting their private data to a company with physical ties to the United States." I think if you are concerned about the U.S. government looking at your personal data, you don't want to in any way have that data housed with a company that has any physical ties whatsoever to the United States. I think those are probably words to the wise. I saw that, Michael, and I almost read that. Dr. Radmanthes, an interesting twist in the story that it was Chris Christie who convicted Sharp James for corruption when he was a New Jersey U.S. attorney makes you wonder about Cory Booker not running against him. I guess he has a pretty good shot at U.S. Senate, though, so maybe it's nothing. Is there a Venn diagram that shows Leno fans and Obama bot overlap a lot or something? Andy's not. I don't get the sense that he's a Leno fan. Sam, another great Haley Edwards, but I disagree with her that the CMS was not aware of the ruck. Recall the head of the CMS, who was not confirmed by the Senate, Donald Berwick, was trying hard to bring these issues to the forefront. I think he may now be running for Mass governor, maybe a future guest. Oh, that's a really good point. All of that's a good point. Will you put Donald Berwick down? Donald Berwick was nominated to head the Center for Medicare and Medicaid. He was doing a lot of work on the comparative value of different practices and was not an ideological choice in any way. It's just like just doing good data. And he would be a great guest. Yeah, Donald Berwick. Will you put that down, Michael? Jay Tingle, Henry Jaglom, killer stuff. Anyway, Square, the song is called Moves Like Jagger. Not Move Like Jagger? Your theory that a celebrity changes the center of gravity in a room was investigated and demonstrated in 1989 during a Spy magazine TV special on NBC. For the experiment, the producers directed a group of people into a room with a table of pastries and coffee. After several minutes, Ricardo Montalban quietly entered the room and stood at a distance from the table. Cut to a shot of the entire room from above as we see that the occupants of the room slowly but intently move from the table and surround Mr. Montalban. Sam, haven't you already seen Eddie and the Cruisers 2? I haven't seen the animated version, if there's an animated version of that. Scott Kate, I would love to see Booker bot Andy Kindler, robotic voice. He saved a woman from burning building. He's the greatest in the world. I bet. You're right. Wow. Former Senator Scott Brown's brother arrested in Connecticut for impersonating a cop, says Clower. Oh, that's precious. You guys are going to have a nice Matt and Mike Monday. Ian Longsdon. I had a thought on the DIA evidence scandal. Should we refer to it as evidence laundering? I think it gets the problem across best, phrasing-wise. Yeah, indeed. Hope Feld, today's 39th anniversary of Nixon's resignation, so book James Goodale, the New York Times lawyer during the Pentagon. That's on the list, right, Michael? He has a new book out. Great. He gave me an A in his New Media, Old Media First Amendment course in law school. By the way, New York Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal um, Yes. I tried to book her on that piece. It's very tough for me to get New York Times reporters. See the NPR show Fresh Air with Terry Gross Wednesday or Tuesday. She might record a short interview. Link for transcript, Fresh Air. Or it might be this transcript. Twitter handle is NYT Rosenthal. One word. Peeps, she'd follow her if they want to know about prices for health care. Kidam. Republican State Senate Bill Bradley is proposing legislation, tuition vouchers to families of Chicago public schools whose schools have been closed. Vouchers. So is this the big plan? This is how they move everyone to a voucher system, right? They close the schools. I can't reach you via Jabber. Is it me or you? Well, I don't know. I just reached you, but you just reached me. I don't know. I got to check that. That sounded like Alex Jones, but it was a shitty soundboard, but a commendable attempt. Matt in the BK, as an NYC Democrat, I feel like the Republicans during the primary is looking for anyone but Mitt. I have committed to vote for whoever is behind Quinn to get her into a runoff. Yes, I agree. Very sad about Booker in New Jersey. He'll be there as long as he wants. He and Schumer can form the wholly owned Wall Street caucus. Ahmad, look into Hushmail for secure email replacement based in Canada. Bartleby, Sam, Mila's vocalizing very impressive. She can carry a tune. She can. She did not get that from me. Happy birthday to her. You seem to be attracting some rather disturbed stalker type callers lately. Comes with the territory, I guess. Have you covered that story evolving that BP is looking to renege on Gulf oil spill settlement? Absolutely disgusting, yet entirely predictable. Yeah, I will talk about that next week. Guitar Czar, is Andy that much of a bot or is it a shtick? I think it's a little bit of both. Crystal Count, premium revenue idea. Majority Report branded Obamabot app. $4.99. Answer any question. The keywords are used to reply with random Obamabot sound bites. Wow. That's a great idea because, you know, that's a great idea. DVD purchase recommendation, Tom Snyder, Punk and New Wave. Great music, but very fascinating political interviews. Very apt for today, especially when the show was produced by Roger Ailes. Huh. I didn't know that he produced that show. That's fascinating. All right, we're way over. We're going to give all this as a freebie, and it's going to... going to cost $4,000 in server time. We will do... Hey, Mila! You want to come up here for a second? It's got to be now or never. Come on. All right, I'm going to let my kid onto the show because it's her birthday. Let's see... got her plugged in here. The final IM of the week. Sam, henceforth, you'll be referring to your daughter as Miley from now on. You can change your name to Billy Ray. All right, ladies and gentlemen, entering into... Oh, all right. Then she's not going to come. Well, we'll play her song. Not to confuse, Hushmail supposedly has a back door. The final IM of the week will come from lawyer Matthew. Who wishes Mila a happy birthday. And we will go. We're going to start. I know you've heard it already multiple times. But we will probably play this out.
Oh.
Needs a little work on that part.
For the stars, If it feels like a name from my heart.
All right, folks.
If it feels like
see you next week.
Take me away and make it okay. I swear I'll behave. You want the control, so we'll make it. You want her to know. Yeah, we'll take it. You say I'm a kid. My ego is bad. I don't give a shit.
To get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick. Don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive.